Welcome to the Hilltop United Methodist Church podcast. Hilltop is located in Sandy, Utah, 985 East, 10,600 South. Locals would say 106th. Our two worship services are at 9 o'clock and 10:30. Hope to see you this Sunday. God bless. Bye-bye.
So if you have been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things that are above, not on things that are here on earth. For you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, is revealed, then you will also be revealed with him in glory. Put to death, therefore, whatever in you is earthly, fornication, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which is idolatry. On account of these, the wrath of God is coming on those who are disobedient. These are the ways you also once followed when you were living that life. But now you must get rid of all such things: anger, wrath, malice, slander, abusive language from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, seeing that you have stripped off the old self with its practices, that have clothed yourselves with the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge according to the image of his creator. In that renewal, there is no longer Greek and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave and free, but Christ is all and in all.
All right. And in a moment, I'm going to teach you what I want you to do, but nobody flinch. That's what I don't want you to do, flinch. Okay, can you do that for me? Yes or no?
Yeah.
Okay, now, Laura Schroeder has already preached my sermon. So I may just shorten it up. What do you think? Anybody here interested in coffee and cookies?
No.
I've got some thumbs up there. All right. I'm going to continue the reading. I gave Mel the first part of the reading because I figured it would be better for her to say the word fornication rather than me. Okay? Mel can seem to handle that in a public way far better than I can. I blush. Colossians 3, verses 12 through 17, still on page 201. Most of my reflection will be on most of the material that Mel's already read to you. As God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience. Bear with one another. If anyone has a complaint against another, forgive each other. Just as the Lord has forgiven you, so you also must forgive. Above all, clothe yourselves with love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony, And let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called in the one body. And be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly. Teach and admonish one another. Admonish along with teach. Teach and admonish one another in all wisdom. And with gratitude in your hearts, sing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs to God. And whatever you do, in word or deed, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. This is the word of God for the people of God.
Thanks be to God. Amen.
We've been talking for several weeks, two past and then today, I'm going to talk three more, on the idea of how to live unafraid in a world that at times wants you to be very afraid. We've used this smoke detector as a good example. Some, I don't know about you, but in my household, most of the time when this goes off, it's a false alarm. It's something that really isn't the matter. But sometimes we have this thing inside of us called fight or flight. And sometimes it's a good thing for us to be afraid. I use the example at 9 o'clock, if you're walking down the street of downtown Salt Lake and all of a sudden a car loses control and it comes up on the sidewalk, you want the flight mechanism to kick in. You wanna have that fear. It's an appropriate fear, it's a healthy fear, it's a good fear, nothing wrong. But sometimes it's like this fire alarm at 2 o'clock in the morning, usually in January or February when it's nice and cold. And it goes off and it gets aggravated, but we really know there's nothing really wrong with it. We went through a few examples of what the word F-E-A-R might be broken into. I'm an Army, former Army officer, and the Army can make an acronym out of everything, okay? We could do that. Some of those are acronyms that you know, like North Atlantic Treaty Organization is
NATO.
Okay? There's one in the Southeast, SEATO, S-E-A-T-O, Southeast Asia Treaty Organization. And we live with those kind of acronyms that are out there, but you can sometimes treat fear instead of as a word by itself, you can also treat it as an acronym. And sometimes the fear that we talked about is this forget everything and run. That's sort of a, maybe when the car is bearing down on you on the sidewalk, that's probably a good thing to do, forget everything and run, although you want to maybe grab your wife in that process, or husband, and drag them along as well. Maybe. Alan said maybe. I'd worry about that, Sandy. I'd worry about that. Alan said maybe. There's no doubt in my mind that I would better grab Marilyn. Okay. So one, it could be forget everything and run. But we talked about one a couple of weeks ago, which was face everything and rise. Face everything and rise. And Mel read you some passages there for us, which was, if you have been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above where Christ is. Now, he's in this particular passage, Paul or Paul's protege is calling us to a higher place like heaven. Okay? So, but the question is, can you bring heavenly thoughts down here? And I would say you can. So, seek the things that are above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things that are above, not on things that are on earth. Let this Spirit enter into you in such a way that you can take on this full body of Christ and forget everything and rise. Now, so what I want you to do is, during the reflection, when I do this, I want you to say the followings, which is, face everything and rise. You ready?
Face everything and rise.
That was pretty good. Pretty good. Now, I think we can maybe do it better, so we're going to practice it one more time. What do you think, Mel?
I think we can do it better.
We can do it a little bit better? Okay. Mel says you can do it better. She has faith in you. Let's try this one more time.
Face everything and rise.
That was better than any time the 9 o'clock group did it, and they did it like 7 times. So you can, next time you see a 9 o'clock person, you can go up and say, we were better on you than you on the response. Okay? And then don't lord over them too long and buy them a cup of coffee. All right? So that's the idea we want to have as I beep that. Alan, if I get too far away from that, you help me out here. Okay? Come get it for me or whatever. But I'm trying to keep it right there. All right? Last Monday was a reflection for us on Martin Luther King's birthday. It was actually his birthday. The 15th of January is his birthday, and we don't always get it where the day off is exactly his birthday, but last week it was. And I want to talk just a little bit about Dr. King and a comment that he made about how it is that we might want to think about the subject of fear. People fail to get along because they fear each other. They fear each other because they don't know each other. They don't know each other because they have not communicated with each other. We fear each other because we don't know. We don't know each other because we don't meet. We don't communicate. All right? That's laid out there for us, and it's an opportunity for us to think a little bit about how it is that we might lead our lives. And this is not just Dennis Shaw and Dr. King talking to you. This is also biblical. It's also biblical. Now, I realize in portions of the Old Testament, they wanted to be set apart, fear the other. But we've gone to a different place. So part of the New Covenant is this idea of living not in fear of the other. Mel read them off there, Scythian and barbarian, circumcised, uncircumcised, Jew, Gentile, male. We didn't get to men and women, but it's all of that is in there. And in Hebrews 10:24-25, we're told, and let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some. What the author is basically saying there is that you do need to meet together. You do need to get together on occasion. And some people have gotten out of that practice. They've gotten out of that practice, and so they bring sometimes dissension to the group when they do that. Now, I was sent an email note this week which said we had four of these Dinners for Eight groups out there. Four. I was told that was the number. Four Dinners for Eight groups. And I guess at a church of 500-ish members and others, and maybe another 100 people that worship here, not as members, I guess I was surprised at how low that number was. And what I would suggest to you is that maybe what we want to do is to get together a group of Dinners for Eight, and maybe even invite somebody to that group. Don't tattoo it on their forehead and say, I invited you, but I don't like you. But nonetheless, maybe try to identify with that group and invite somebody that you don't know real well and you're not sure if you like them or not. I'm expecting 40 invitations. What do you think? Okay. So that's a little bit of a homework assignment for us there. And so get to know each other that way over food. That's the way the early church got going, was an awful lot of how they got together and got to know each other was over food. They were Methodist and just didn't know it. So the anthem that we sang there was an invitation drawing itself from what we heard in the Hebrews there. The part that we sang, which was this, hold on, dear brother, hold on, dear sister. And it didn't say hold on to Alan. It didn't say hold on to John. It didn't say hold on to Tony. It said hang on, hold on. Hang on, hold on to who? Hold on to me. I'm going to be a source for you to be welcomed into this world. And by the way, as I'm telling you to hold on to me, you are not alone. You are not alone. And that the poetry's fantastic. So face everything and rise.
Face everything and rise.
I don't know, Mel. What would you give him on that one? B minus?
Terrible.
Okay. Mel gave you a bad grade. Okay, let's just do it one more time. Face everything and rise.
Face everything.
They're getting better, Mel. They're getting better. They are. Now, I want to go back a little bit in history, and I'm from the South, and don't laugh when I say this. I'm from the South, and a long time ago, we used to refer to the Civil War as the War of Northern Aggression. I've gotten to a place where I don't like that anymore. As I get deeper and deeper in my understanding and the culture, I'll be 70 in 2 weeks, is this opportunity for me to see the world in a different way. And I've now through reading enough history and things like that, that the nature of what happened as the Civil War was brought on in large by the creation of fear in the South. That's where it came from. The history of it was in the South. And it was driven to a situation to the 90% of the population that didn't own slaves. They anticipated a situation where the country would have to break apart. The people in South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, and Mississippi were the primary instigators of this. But nonetheless, they got to a place where we've got to talk to the non-slaveholders in such a way that they will support this separation of the country. 90% of the South didn't own slaves. The 10% that did own slaves, very few of them owned very many slaves, 2, 3, 4, 5, something like that, all right? Most of the slaveholding was in like 12,000 plantations, a very fairly small number when you got up into these hundreds and 200s of slaves, all right? And the irony of course, is the fact that the slaveholding actually made the value of labor of a non-slaveholder less. If you were a blacksmith, in a town that had lots of slave labor that could do blacksmithing, your labor had to be priced below that of what it cost to have a blacksmith be done by a slave down the road owned by somebody else, okay? So it made the white laborers less valuable. And the irony of it is that they were able to use fear as a vocabulary in order to cause people to fear the freeing of blacks, the freeing of slaves, the freeing of, in the word of the day, Negroes was what they called, Negroes. And they used that by saying, my goodness, if you free the Negroes, one of them might actually marry your daughter. If you free the Negroes, you might actually have one on a jury with you. They might be deciding your guilt and innocence. If you really think about it, if you really free the Negroes and make them like us, and we all know they're not like us, they're inferior, This is the rhetoric of the day, not me. But even if we can, you could even have one be a judge over you, deciding your guilt and innocence. Do you really want that? Aren't you afraid of that? And that was successful. It was successful in creating this climate of fear. This climate of fear, and it led to this horrible devastation that we had called the Civil War. It wasn't anything civil about it, but it was the Civil War. And we defined there that how we were going to be together forever from as a result of that. Now, but this is not a history class. I want to use that as an illustration as to how people sometimes would use fear to get people to do things on their behalf. I wish I could report that that has stopped being done. I wish I could report that that doesn't go on anymore. But I'm here to tell you that I think fear is still one of the predominant mechanisms that people use to get us to do things, however that's done. That's across the spectrum. Do not sit down and think I'm talking about any one person, any one party. I think it's a fairly universally used element, and it's used worldwide. It's a basic element of the human condition. I'm going to use fear to cause you to do what I want you to do. I'm going to get used to that. So a good example for, now I'm going to, here what I'm going to do, face everything and rise.
Face everything and rise.
Pretty good. I give it an A-. It wasn't good as the last time, but it was pretty good. Now, my father was a very, very strong advocate on behalf of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He had already passed away when I was born, but nonetheless, in my household, you better not ever say anything bad about Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the President of the United States between 1933 and 1945. My father was a member of the Civilian Conservation Corps and helped get his life situated around the CCCs. And so my father had this tremendous love for FDR. I want to use FDR as a good example of how we can say one thing at one time and then forget it 12 years later, 9 years later, excuse me. And FDR, if you had to do one quote from FDR, what is the one quote you could probably offer that said FDR said this? What is it?
Nothing to fear but fear itself.
We have nothing to fear but fear itself. Okay? Now, a former Navy guy here said, this shall live it as a day of infamy. That's the second most famous thing he ever said. Okay? But what I was looking for in this context was, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. And he was talking economic fear in 1933 when he said that. He's talking economic fear. Now, by the way, that comment it's not always 100% correct, because he wasn't talking about the fear that you get when a drunk driver gets up on the sidewalk and starts to mow you down on the sidewalk, okay? That fear is appropriate, and you should do that, all right? You should get off the sidewalk. That's called flight. Exercise to flight. But by and large, FDR's comment was reasonably accurate. We have nothing to fear but fear itself. It can feed off of itself. It becomes this feeding frenzy. And he did some things in the early 1930s. By the way, the Depression wasn't over until we got into World War II, because we went through about 6 or 7 or 8 years of continued economic decline. But that's a separate conversation, different day. The point really is that FDR offered, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. Now, let me do a little quiz for you that know what's going on. In 1942, after the Day of Infamy speech, okay, every Japanese American in Oregon, Washington State, California, Arizona, Nevada, maybe Utah, I don't know, Hawaii, etc., were picked up from where they were, like 145,000 people, were picked up from where they were and were transported to concentration camps. They were doing this under the exigencies of the war. We needed to do this because of the war. But what do you think the over-defining emotion was that caused that to happen?
Fear.
Fear. The man who said in 1933, we have nothing to fear but fear itself, maybe he wasn't the architect of the idea, but he did not resort back to his history and say, no, in March 1933, I said, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. By the way, I will say to you, for those of you not familiar with military history stories, the 442nd Regimental Combat Team, which was composed entirely of Japanese Americans, was the most decorated regiment in the United States Army during World War II, okay? And the former Senator Daniel Inouye, the retired senator, I think he's passed away now, but if you ever recall him, he has one arm. His arm was lost in the 442nd Regimental Combat Team. The Medal of Honors, the Silver Stars, It was incredible what they did, just bravery. So the fear did not seem to be well placed. It seemed like they had forgotten everything and run, as opposed to face everything and rise. So the question sometimes for us is, what is it do we fear? And we want to come back to that first hymn that we sang. And the Christian response to this is reminding ourselves that we're called to be what? Called all to be one. We're called to be one with each other. And between Mel and I, we read some of that stuff back and forth, the two of us. We read that in the Colossians. And we're called to be one with each other. And we're called to walk with each other as sisters and brothers, united in love. That's what we just sang. And it means something. It's important for us to say that not only are we going to sing it, we're going to have to go to that place that the sign was outside. Don't believe everything you think. Don't believe everything you think. You have to sometimes take that tape that is playing in your head and turn it off. You have to go turn it off. Now, the question sometimes for you is, what is it you fear? What is it that you fear? I would hope nobody fears me, okay? But nonetheless, what is it that you fear? Is it illegal immigrants? Is it Muslims? Is it terrorists? Is it insert something in there for you? And I would suggest to you that we need to figure out a way to hear that fear and try to rise above it. And one of the ways that you actually do rise above that is to first not to be complicit in this automatic knee-jerk response around fear and try to go deeper into the topic and see what it is that you can learn. Now, the medical staff, the medical professionals that are here today, I do not want you to think that I'm saying we should fear you, okay? But if you take for a look, for example, on the issue of homicide. Now, we have 12,000 to 15,000 people a year are murdered in the United States. That separate conversation, different day, it's a too big a number, all right? Way, way, way too big a number, all right? Most of those crimes are, by the way, a criminal on criminal. There's a lot of criminal on criminal crime that's going on there. So it's score settling in the drug business and some of that kind of thing, which is not to say there aren't innocent people that are killed. I'll get to that in a second. But if you had to make a guess, the probability is greater that you will be killed by a murderer who's trying to kill you, or by an accident, oversight, or a mistake made while you're a patient or in care of a doctor, nurse, nursing attendant, an orderly at a hospital. Which one do you think is greater? Medical. The medical is higher. And I don't mean by a little bit. I mean it's like it's three or four times greater. We're not 100% clear exactly what the number is. Some of the estimates range from between 200,000 and 400,000, but especially when you include in retirement locations and rehab centers. But it's a fairly large number, and the point really is that it's your probability under any measure is greater on the medical side than it is on the murder side, okay? And frankly, once you then also drop it down to murders of white suburbanites, it drops even further as to what the probability is. I'm asking another probability question. Who do you think has greater probability of being murdered? A white suburbanite or an innocent elderly black man living in poverty in the inner city? The black man. But we somehow get this thing going where we live in fear of what's going to happen. We live in an economically good situation. We live in a safe situation. I'm a Chaplain City Police chaplain. I'm sworn in. You don't have anything to fear from me. They don't issue me a gun, so don't worry about that. And I can't give you a ticket, so Mary Jane, you're safe. I won't give you a ticket. But nonetheless, the point really is that we get ourselves into a place of we decide we're going to live out of fear. And one of the ways that we have to operate is to refuse to live out of fear, where it is that we face everything and rise.
Face everything and rise.
You have 1,000 situations where you might need to be fearful, where fear is presented as an option. And I would say 999. Maybe you have 10,000 situations where it's 9,999. But nonetheless, most of the situations that we face, that people create, want to create fear for us, that we respond to, are false fears. We forget everything's all right, and we drop, we forget everything, and we run. Okay? And instead, what we need to do is focus on face everything and rise. Face everything and rise. How do we turn off that tape? How do we turn that tape off in our head? I would say to you, one is to study the facts. One is to simply try to make an effort to study the facts. And you got to be careful on the internet. Sometimes you'll find sites that will tell you what the facts are, and they aren't really the facts. But you nonetheless, at the end of the day, you need to probably study the facts. And then you need to remember that what Dr. King was saying to combat fear. We part of what we do to combat fear is we get to know each other. And to get to know each other, we have to communicate with each other. We have to go to a place where we can indeed cast aside our fears and doubts, because we treat the other as someone who is like us, a special creature, a special child of God. We have to figure out a way to turn that tape off. And maybe what you don't want to do to turn that tape off is say, Pastor Dennis suggested to me that I need to be in the business of correcting stinking thinking. I need to be in the business of correcting stinking thinking. And how did Dr. King combat that? He combated that by being open to a dialogue and trying to get to know people in such a way that he could call them his friend. In a moment, we're going to suggest in song that Christ has broken down the wall. Let me invite the musicians to go ahead and move so we're ready there for that. Christ has broken down the wall. In a moment, we're going to sing, "Let us join our hearts as one." Why? So we can cast our doubts, cast away our doubts and fears. You're on a sidewalk in downtown Salt Lake. You're on a sidewalk in downtown Salt Lake. Scenario number one is a drunk driver gets off the road and their car gets up on the sidewalk and is about to hit you. Get out of the way. Get out of the way. Scene number two, you're on a sidewalk in downtown Salt Lake. And a person starts walking towards you, pushing a shopping cart. A person starts walking towards you and they're unkempt in personal appearance and they're drooling and they're acting a little unusual. Or a person is walking towards you and they're Hispanic. Or a person is walking towards you and they're black. Or a person is walking towards you and they have on garments that would suggest to you they're Muslim. Okay? I would suggest to you that you have nothing to fear, by and large, from that encounter. I'm not saying don't put your guards up a little bit. I'm not saying that at all. But I am saying the Christian response to that is not to be in fear of this particular moment. That's the most basic level. And our strategy should be to keep rising above that, rising above that, rising above that. So we are indeed living out Paul out of Colossians, or whoever wrote Colossians' letter, which is inviting us to bring those heavenly things down and bring them here into this world, forgetting the earthly things and living our lives as Christ lived his. Face everything and rise.
Face everything and rise.
Please stand as you are able.
Hilltop is located in Sandy, Utah, 985 East, 10,600 South. Locals would say 106th. Our two worship services are at 9 o'clock and 10:30. Hope to see you this Sunday. God bless. Bye-bye.